This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. On the program this afternoon, our monthly show about computers. We take up this topic each month on the third Monday of the month. I invite your questions about computers this afternoon for Peter Kimball of the University of Illinois. Peter is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the university's Technology Consortium, FAST 3. If you've got a question, a comment, or a concern about computers and computing, give us a call. If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. I'm going to say good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It's a beautiful afternoon out there.
It is. And we've already got a listener who would like to talk with you, Peter. So let's take this call.
Let's get started.
Listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Yeah, good morning. It's afternoon. I'm in the process of looking at portable computers. I have to, admit the fact that I'm semi-literate when it comes to computers. So anyway, different brands, Apple, Dell, Toshiba, do you have any, in terms of, in portables, there's what, a smaller version and sort of an intermediate-sized version or not?
Well, with the laptop or portable PCs, there's actually quite a range now.
Okay.
Some of them are the very small, very portable ones, but don't have quite as much power. They're not the equivalent of a desktop machine in terms of their capability, and they're not designed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are machines that are somewhat heavier. They're obviously still portable, but they even have almost cinema-sized screens, and they can do everything just as quickly as your desktop machine. So it really depends on what you intend on doing with it. Is it going to be your only machine? Are you going to be dealing with mostly email and web surfing? Are you going to be dealing with a lot of digital images and retouching? Or
no, I mean, I was thinking about not anything too really sophisticated, email and in terms of the web, that kind of thing, and probably some. But not a lot of stuff.
And will this be your primary or your only machine?
Yeah,
probably?
Before this, my son had a business and I had access to his main computer. But I don't really need something with a lot of stuff on it. Although, what happens if you want to do downloading of music or especially taking things off of the Focus 580 things and all that. Do you need a lot of sophistication there or not?
No, not really. Almost any machine you get now will be able to handle that. You'll want to make sure that the machine, if you're going to be downloading a fair amount of music and other files, that the machine has a fairly large hard drive, but it's difficult even to get one with less than a 60 gigabyte hard drive, and I'd probably look for something with maybe 120 gigabytes at a minimum. It's not that much more expensive than a smaller hard drive, and you'll be pleased when it doesn't fill up nearly as quickly.
Now, what happens, do you have a, traditionally, and again, I don't know a lot about computers, but Apple didn't, in terms of was easier, it didn't take as much capacity or something or other, is that right, or is that still true today? In terms of, with the Windows and stuff, I don't know.
Well, either there was more of a difference between the Apple Macintosh portables and the Windows-compatible ones in the past. Now, many of them, they have pretty much the same general equivalent. In fact, the Apple machines, the Macintoshes, can actually run Windows now that they're based on the same
mm-hmm.
internal processing chip as most
mm-hmm.
PC machines.
In terms of that, the decision wouldn't have been...
No. My recommendation in terms of which brand to get would be to decide whether or not you want to go the Apple Macintosh route or the non-Macintosh route. One of the decisions, one of the factors in that decision would be if somebody is, of course, familiar with using the Mac, they should probably want to stay with it. If they're not, it really doesn't matter too much. Most of the applications are going to be similar. It is still the case because there are a lot of companies competing to make computers that are non-Macintosh Macintosh, the Windows-type machines, you're going to get a little bit more bang for the buck in terms of size and memory and capacity than you would with the Apple. But the Apple is still an excellent machine, and it's not as much over the price of the other machines as it used to be.
What about what is the Korean brand?
There are several, and I'm not sure which one is Korean. There are a number of Chinese and other brands. There's Lenovo, there's Toshiba, there's several Japanese brands. There's in the U.S., there's Dell, and there's Hewlett-Packard, which has taken over Compaq. Almost any of those would be fairly decent. You need to decide how much you can spend.
Okay.
And there's a big difference between, you know, having a machine that you're going to spend $1,000 on and one that you spend $2,500 on. You'll have all kinds of cinema experiences, which you indicate you may not need on the larger ones. And then I would suggest getting to some location where you've got access to the web before you've gotten the machine and doing a Google search with the brand name, not necessarily go to the manufacturer's website, but to include in the search terms the word review or reviews to see what some of the other locations have said. I'll add one other thing. If this is going to be your primary machine, if you have any chance at all to get to someplace and try it out, try the keyboard. Some laptops have smaller keyboards. They're fine for a temporary occasional use, but they would get a little bit awkward to use on a full-time basis. A number of laptops have the full-size keyboard just like a regular desktop machine would, and most people find that much more convenient and much more comfortable.
And the final one is, what about screen? What happens is that in terms of vision, which is that you get less, I don't know what you used to get from television. It wasn't good for the eyes, you know, that kind of stuff. Stress and all that kind of stuff. Is there any new screens that are coming out?
Most all machines that are currently being sold actually have a very high-quality screen. One of the biggest differences is the size. Some of them are the standard traditional, mostly, you know, squarish. They're not quite square. There are some that are also the wide screen. They're much wider than they are tall. But all of them have, these days, I think it'd be difficult to find a machine that didn't have a fairly high-quality display, and the eye fatigue and such that was a problem in years past is not much of a factor now.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
You're very welcome. Next, we talk with a listener on line 2 in Champaign. Hello.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I've got a troubleshooting problem involving digital photography in my computer. I've came across this problem this morning, so this show is very timely. What I'm trying to do is copy photographs that are on my hard drive on a computer at work to my digital camera so that I can make it portable and take the memory disk to a Photoshop and have color prints made. Copying the photos over, I'm cutting and pasting. That appears to be doing everything normally, but when I go to view the photos on the camera, there's nothing there. Is this a common problem, or am I running into a specific hardware compatibility problem?
It's unfortunately not an uncommon problem, and I don't know if I can give you a specific cure for it, but the underlying difficulty is, while you would think that everybody formats it's like a smart card or a memory card of some sort, you would think that everybody formats them the same. There are some differences. I've discovered the same thing with a camera that I've got, which happens to be a Sony brand, using a memory stick.
That's exactly what I'm using.
Okay, well, then I don't know how far out it goes beyond Sony, but certainly when I try to put something in there, the camera can't read it. So I've given up trying to deal with that. I suspect that there is a solution. It might involve reformatting the memory card in the camera and so that it's formatted the proper way. But perhaps there is a slightly better way for you to accomplish what you want to do. You essentially want to get them off the hard drive so that you can then get them into Photoshop at home or something.
Let's say you go to a store and have ordered 1 hour photos. Actually.
Okay. There are a number of other ways that you can do that. If you actually have a smart card, I wouldn't necessarily do this with the one that you're going to be using in the camera, because the camera may not be able to easily read it until you format it. But if you buy a separate smart memory stick or whatever it is,
okay,
format that on the PC, put all of the things on the PC. You don't have to be able to see them in the camera to be able to take them to, you know, the photo kiosk.
Sure.
And deal with them there. Or even to load them up if you've got a card reader. And if you don't have a card reader, for $10 or $15, you can get a little device for a PC that can read all 9 different card formats.
Okay.
So I would not necessarily feel that you need to have it viewable in the camera as an intermediate step to getting it to a photo kiosk.
Sure. Sounds like a reasonable workaround. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
Next, we talk with a listener in Urbana on line 3.
Hello. I've got a bit of a problem this morning. Last night, I was trying to install some software on an HP laptop and got a message that the C partition was too full, so I ran the cleanup procedure. And then I decided, well, I'll get rid of some more unused programs. And in doing that, I apparently deleted some DLLs.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I replaced 2 or 3 of them and decided maybe it'd be easier just to re-install Windows. And I had, it did have Windows Home. I had a copy of Windows Pro from an older machine that I wanted to put on it anyway. Everything seemed to go okay, except it now no longer sees the modem or the wireless network, which had been working flawlessly.
So the software, the version of Windows that you installed was Windows XP Pro?
Yeah.
Okay. And you have since, and you presumably had a CD that you installed that from.
Right.
And of course, because you no longer have access, it's, depending on how old the CD was, it may be not the most recent version of Windows XP.
No, I do have the, I think it had the...
SP2, the Service Pack 2?
Service Pack 1, and I have Service Pack 2, which I then installed.
Okay, good. Well, the problem is, and you said this was a...
it's an HP.
HP. The problem is almost certainly the fact that the you don't have the proper drivers, the little bits of software that go between the operating system and the actual hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you're in sort of a catch-22 situation because you can't exactly go and download them since you don't have access to either your wireless card or to the modem. But if you have a wireless, if you've got a wireless environment at your home or office, wherever you're doing this, do you also then have, if you've got the wireless router, do you have the ability of plugging in just an Ethernet cable and having a wired connection?
Yes, and it appears that it probably does recognize the Internet adapter.
Yeah, because that's more commonly a fairly standard bit of hardware on the motherboard. So that mm-hmm. means you actually do have the ability then to go out to the net and to download. So what you should do is try to go to the HP site. Now, I've not done this with HP, but I've done this at a number of other sites, including Dell. Excuse me. And the you should be able to specify the model number. The serial number probably won't be necessary, but it's there on the bottom of your laptop. And find the actual drivers, assuming that you don't have the original driver disks that came with the machine.
I do, but they're for HP Home, and I was wondering if that was really safe.
That's going to be, for those particular drivers, as long as you specify that it's just going to be for that machine, those drivers should work, and worst case, you'll be no worse off than you are now.
Mm-hmm.
But because the hardware is the same, whether or not it's HP Home or whether it's the XP Home or the XP Professional talking to it, but you could also simply go to the HP site. There should be a section about support or downloads where you will be able to specify your particular model number, and they may have a few other questions about it. And there will be the actual drivers. You'll need to download those, install them, and there'll be guidelines to do that. But that's certainly what the difficulty is. This is not at all uncommon when people reinstall an operating system because the version that came from the manufacturer included all those drivers pre-installed.
Well, I wanted to really clean up, so I reformatted the drive.
Well, that's
the reformat option as well.
Yeah, and that is actually an excellent thing to do once you've gotten, you know, all of your documents and things safe. Nobody wants to go out and do that, you know, without making sure that all of the
unfortunately, I have the hard drive divided into several partitions.
Okay. So that is my original basic suggestion would be to go to the HP site and to attempt to download the drivers for the wireless. But when you specify the model number that you've got, that should also be enough for the HP site to identify which particular model of what's the actual wireless hardware that's there and what the actual modem hardware is there. And the appropriate driver should take care of that.
Well, thank you.
One other thing I'll mention, if you are, it would involve purchasing some additional software, but there is software available that will, on the fly, reallocate space on a single hard drive between multiple partitions. So if you ended up with your one hard drive divided into drives C and D, logically, that can be shuffled around. It's a program, it may have changed its name recently, but it was originally called Partition Magic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a one solution for those who don't have the option of reformatting the drive itself.
Well, I do have that software.
Okay. So that it's not painless, but it is another option to keep in mind for the future. But in this case, it will do you no good. You've already done the formatting, which is good. It definitely cleans things up, and you simply need to find those drivers. If you don't find them at the HP site, the Google search for your particular model, you include the actual model number of your HP, and the word driver and wireless card or something, you'll probably find lots of third-party sites that can...
Well, thanks very much.
Yeah, good luck.
Good luck.
Bye.
Bye-bye. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and on the program this afternoon, our monthly show about computers, Peter Kimball of the University of Illinois is our guest this afternoon. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. could you explain what this dual core is on computers that one buys these days and what it does, and just for a novice? Thank you.
Sure. The latest sets of computer chips from Intel and others are being advertised, as you know, as dual core. And what that basically means is, for all practical purposes, the one processor chip that's in the computer is actually has enough circuitry on it to behave as if it is two separate computers that communicate one with each other, each one with the other, which means that once an application, a software program, is written to take advantage of that, it can run much faster. It's sort of like having a team of two machines working on your whatever the task is, instead of just one having to do it. There are certain kinds of things that can't be done in parallel like that, but most of them, there are several things going on at once. And so it can make a significant difference. It's not going to double the speed at which things happen, but it could easily make, depending on the particular software, a difference of 20 or 30% or more. So it is not just advertising hype. It is actually a worthy innovation.
So it's not a backup hard drive or something?
No, not the dual core. The dual core is a chip. So a number of companies are shipping computers, I think Dell is doing it, and maybe one or two other companies,
mm-hmm.
That actually have a extra hard drive, and they have done it so that it's mirroring the information that was originally installed. So if you call the support company, they can just simply clone the working operating system from the backup drive that you're never using onto the one that you do use. But no, that's not the same as the dual-core chip.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
You're welcome. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line two. Hello.
Hi. I just mostly wanted to remind your first caller how important it is to get a backup drive and also to get the however much extended warranty as possible on his machine, because even though it's going to be an extra cost, it will be worth it in the end.
Okay, well, thank you. There is certainly... Excellent. With the low cost of hard drives, it is certainly worth getting an additional hard drive. Sometimes on a laptop, that's a little bit more difficult to do, but a very large hard drive can also be divided into two partitions, as our last caller was discussing. The warranties, you know, the experts are mixed on that. It is certainly a high profit item for the stores, but there is also a fair amount, especially for someone who is not that experienced with going in and playing around with the computer as the original caller was. It's usually not a bad idea at all to go with the warranty. And many times a number of the companies, especially those that deal with things mail order, will, as part of their inducement, say, and we will add a 3-year warranty at, you know, very little extra cost, at half the cost. But it may well be $100 or $200 more altogether, which is not that significant on a machine if it's 10% of the price.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Urbana on line 3. Hello.
Hello?
Oh, hey. Yeah,
yes,
go ahead.
Here.
Is this me? Or I'm from Champaign, but I'll talk anyway.
I'm sorry. That was my mistake.
But you're on line 3, so go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. I have a Mac OS X system in a PowerBook G4 I've had not quite 2 years.
Yes.
And I, too, am like one of those previous callers. I'm not adept at going in and hacking around and trying to figure things out. It seems like when I have, I muss things up. But number one, is there anyone locally, reliable computer company or person who makes house calls?
Yes, I'm sure there are. I wish I could give you a specific name or number, but I'm sure that there are a number of companies. You will find them even in the yellow pages, because mostly these are local companies. It's not really a nationwide franchise business yet, although some of the retail establishments do have a nationally advertised group of people who can go out and assist. But we have a number of local stores as well, and many of them, now some of them have more expertise on the Windows side as opposed to the Macintosh side, but if you simply take a look in the yellow pages under computer support or computer service, you don't really want the sales necessarily.
Right.
The other thing you can do, because most of these are probably going to have a web presence, is you can do a Google search for computer support and include Champaign and Illinois in the search terms, and you'll probably find a number there. Once you've done that, you'll find 2 or 3, and you can certainly call them, ask them, you know, do they handle Mac? What are their fees and such?
Mm-hmm.
And you could actually probably find, if you have identified one or two, you could also try another Google search and include the word review and see if there's any websites that include people's good and or bad experiences. But the ones that are still in business, you know, they're not going to be in business if they haven't done a fairly good job for folks.
Okay, so I go into Google and look for computer
support
or service.
Well, either one you could try, but make sure you include in that search also the words Champaign and Illinois, so that you can get the ones, or Urbana and Illinois, so that you can get the ones that are local.
Mm-hmm. I had.
But check the yellow pages too in the phone book.
I called a company I'd saved out of one of the free newspapers that was given number one as internet service. Or something like that.
Yes, internet service providers.
And they wanted you to bring everything in. And I don't want to, I have a problem with the printer connection is part of my problems, but not the entire picture. And a family member had set it up for me and said, oh, well, you can figure it out by looking in the book and doing the rest. Well, this person is a real geek. And I mean, with experience, you know, job experience, and left and from out of town. And so the next time I tried to use it, you know, when he was here, well, everything was fine. Next time I tried to use it, which was a few weeks later, nothing happened. And
of course.
And right. And so that's a main problem. And then also, for a long while, I've been able to get videos that come with the over the internet from SBC Global, and then all of a sudden they stopped. several things like that stopped when we'd had a big storm, and I thought it was related to that. But I get, you know, just a blank black where, you know, I would normally get a picture. And I know I had the have the capability, but, you know, I've called them and I've called Mac, and each one blames the other.
Right. And you still do have Internet access.
Yes, I do.
So it's just the video that is not able to be displayed.
That's right.
I'd be surprised if that were a difficulty with storm damage, although it's possible,
uh-huh.
since you have a video display, since you have Internet access. And it may well require a little bit of detective work on the part of someone.
That's
in
why
terms
I wondered if
of
I needed
taking
a...
it someplace, you could try taking just the machine in, not the printer. What they'd be able to tell you at that point is, first of all, they'd certainly be able to get the video and such, you know, figure out what that is. And they could plug it into one of their printers and make sure that everything from the machine out is going to work. And that would limit the problem, if it works there but not when you get it home, to either your printer, which is possible, or to the cable, the connection between them.
Okay.
But at least then you would know that the machine is working right and is printing if it has a printer that is responding to it. And so that will be part of the detective work that that they can do for you. And then
they could do without having to take everything.
Yes. They just won't be able to tell you whether your printer works or not, but they'd be able to tell you whether your machine works with a printer.
Mm-hmm. But then I'd have the problem of getting it. Then, right, I guess.
Well, depending on what they find out. If they discover that the problem is at the computer end, then it should work when you bring it back. Otherwise, they might also be able to, you know, jot down, you know, just make sure that the cable is connected in such and such a way and such. But and of course, the other option is if you've got any neighbors with, you know, 13-year-old kids.
Right. I don't, unfortunately. But and most people I know do not use Macs, but
yeah, it's
where
you're
I work,
in the minority, but it's
support people use Macs, and I love them. I had a previous bad experience with the IBM.
So, yeah, well,
so that's another.
I would suspect if you contact some of these locations, some of them definitely support Mac. Some of them may not, but some of them definitely do, and they would be able to at least do a fair amount of detective work and get the things working within the computer, if not necessarily to the printer.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes,
okay, good
luck with that.
For your program.
Next, we talk with a listener in Decatur on line 4. Hi.
Hello there.
Hello.
I listen to WILL Ag, the agricultural program,
mm-hmm.
and they put that on a some sort of podcast that I can go back and pick it up later on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Now, how do I get that? What do I have to do to get that on a podcast?
Well, you start by going to the WILL website.
Yes.
And from there, let's see, I'll have to actually find my way there here. From there, there will be WILL, probably the AM link. I'm just trying to pull this thing up here real quick. And it's coming. You would think it would come faster since I'm at WILL, but actually it's the same.
There you go.
Then you click on the AM link, and there is then a button right there that says Get Our Podcasts Here, and you click on the podcast, and you can find out there's the Agriculture Pre-Opening, Ag Market Report, etc. They are actually all links to various programs that you can get to.
In other words, I don't have to have a new program or a different program.
You shouldn't have, but there is a on that same page. There is this is all called generically. It's called RSS, which kind of means really simple syndication. And there is on that same page about WILL podcast feeds, there's a link that says, if you don't know what the heck we're talking about, see our resources section below. So there's a section about what you need and how it will all work, and it's pretty self-sufficient there. But that's where you need to go, to the...
So it's all on the page there.
Yes. Go to the WILL.UIUC.edu site, click on the AM link that you'll see over on the left-hand side, and then there is, you will see a big red-orange button. Of course, it's orange. It's the University of Illinois, that says Pod, And there you have not only the podcast feeds, but down at the bottom there are references. So you'll be able to get everything you need there.
Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. Enjoy it.
Goodbye.
Next, we talk with a listener in Kankakee on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there. What can we do for you today?
Got a question about another question about the Core Duo and Windows 64-bit. I upgraded my motherboard and processor a while ago to a Core Duo.
Yes.
But I've been running XP Pro on it, just the 32-bit version.
Right.
What are the advantages and the liabilities of going to the 64-bit version of XP Pro?
If it's a relatively new machine, you may actually want to think about going to eventually going to Vista, the new operating system, and the 64-bit version there. I'll make your question a bit more generic. The advantages of going to a 64-bit version really depends upon the software that you're going to be running, but 64-bit version can address much more memory. It is going to, for software that is going to take advantage of it, it is going to tend to run it faster because it can ship information back and forth within the system. It's like having a 64-lane wide highway instead of a 32-lane wide highway, so information that has to be shuffled back and forth internally can move more quickly. And eventually, we're not looking at this for a few years yet, but probably almost all of the Windows and Macintosh operating systems will move to 64-bit systems. You're not going to notice an incredible amount of difference with most applications yet, but certainly the wave of the future.
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm mostly an internet prowler, and I watch lots of downloaded video. But so I guess it might be an advantage there, although I don't have any problems watching.
You shouldn't have any difficulty, and whether or not you'll notice much of an advantage, if the video player that you're using, whether it's Real or Windows Media Player, I don't know really if they are taking full advantage of the 64-bit processing, but those machines will tend to run basically because they can do their internal shuffling of information back and forth from various parts of the computer more quickly or more information at a time. You may well notice an improvement, but for just viewing video, it might not be that noticeable.
Okay. What about drivers? Am I going to have to go out and scrounge up all the 64-bit drivers?
Yes, you will. And again, I have not yet taken this step myself. I'm staying with 32-bit currently. Quite likely, the hardware is going to have drivers to talk to the various components, the CD drive and the DVD drive and the network card and such, that will be compatible with the 64-bit. I would simply go to the Microsoft.com site, there's a whole section about the 64-bit version of XP Pro, and there will be links from there discussing you may have to hunt around for them a little bit, about issues such as, is your system ready for this, talking about drivers.
Okay. Well, that's very helpful. Thanks.
Okay. Good. Enjoy it.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Peter Kimball of the University of Illinois is our guest this afternoon. Peter is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the University's Technology Consortium, Fast 3. My name is Celeste Quinn. This is the monthly program we do about computers here on the Afternoon Magazine. We take up the topic each month on the third Monday of the month. If you'd like to talk with us, give us a call, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL.
You know, I would like to mention for the caller who asked about agriculture, it's just pointed out that there is also an agriculture link directly on that WILL page, or they can go directly to www.will.ag.org.
Right. Willag.org.
Willag.
Okay. Very good.
Willag.
All right. How about we say we will talk to another caller on line three, a listener in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thank you. I may have solved my problem while I was holding on the phone, but actually, my question comes to about browsers, and I was having some difficulty accessing a site that I knew for sure existed because I, you know, somebody else's computer. And, you know, while I was able to access other sites, every time I tried to go to this site, I would just get a blank page. You know, I mean, nothing would show up. Finally, I just quit the browser, which is Safari. I'm using a Mac, and then you know, restarted it and linked to the page, and then it showed up finally. And I don't quite understand why that is, or because I've had this sort of problem in the past sometimes. But could you explain that?
Well, I can perhaps toss out a couple of possible scenarios, but since it worked when you went back to it, one possibility, and this is not necessarily just Safari, this can happen with probably any browser, is that it can get a little bit confused thinking that it has already loaded the relevant parts of the page. So sometimes closing the browser or clearing out its cache, its a file of previously used pages and images can reset it so it says, oh, I've got to go fetch this. It's also possible for there to be some pages, although in this case it's not with the situation, that require certain technologies. Some websites, for example, do require that to function fully, that what's called ActiveX technology be available, and that's something that pretty much requires Microsoft Internet Explorer, Firefox and Safari and such. Won't really be able, without a fair amount of difficulty, to display those pages. But in your case, I just chalk it up to the Internet gremlins. The Safari got itself into kind of a bit of a fugue state and thought it was showing you something, thought it had done so, and I presume you tried refreshing or reloading when you were on the blank page and nothing happened.
Right.
Which is, again, an indication that it had just gotten itself confused. Since it was able to function properly when you exited and re-entered Safari, there may well be, behind the scenes, no software is bug-free, and that certainly includes Safari, so there may have just been some little glitch that caused it to get into this state.
Now, would the fact that this page comes through Earthlink have any effect on that, or...?
It shouldn't unless Earthlink and some other sites do. They attempt to speed up browsing by caching pages, by storing temporary copies of pages so they don't have to be stored. And so it could be a communications difficulty between your browser, the Earthlink site, saying, I've already sent this to you, you've got it, you know, go ahead and just display it. Some of the technology that they try to use. I take it you are connecting. Are you connecting with a dial-up connection?
No.
Okay, so you do have a fast...
Yeah.
Connection, and through the Earthlink is your is that your internet service provider?
No, I actually have Volo.
Okay, and it simply could be a caching problem, a problem of a page being stored somewhere along the line, and some part of the chain between you and the website thinking you've already got this, and that was cleared when you restarted Safari.
Okay. Well, all right. Yeah, because I mean, occasionally I do have runner problem pages I've gotten before in the past and now can't get. And, you know, I thought, well, you know, sometimes I thought, well, I hadn't been there in a long time. Maybe it just went out of business or something. But, you know, like this was something
sure.
I just found out about recently. I wanted to order some martial arts stuff from, and then I couldn't, you know.
Well, the basic technique when something like that happens, one of the first and simplest things to do is what you did do. Try, A, shutting down the software like Safari. If that doesn't do it, one of the things to make sure things aren't really just temporarily haywire is before you do anything else, you can simply restart the machine and then restart the software. And then if it still doesn't work, you may have some more difficulties. But clearly in your case, just restarting Safari did it for you.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Next, we talk with a listener in Urbana on line one. Hi. Whoops, hold on. We're getting to you. There, we got it. Okay. Reel them in here. Hi there. You're on the air. Go ahead.
All right. I'm an older person who grew up on using DOS, and I wanted primarily someone gave me a gift, and the gift is a gateway notebook. And I want to know whether I can install DOS onto this computer. My son says that's DOS is too outdated to be able to do that. And just operate on DOS. I'm primarily using it for writing.
and the software that you want to use for writing is like an old DOS-based version of WordPerfect or something?
That's right. Yep.
And I presume that the machine has like Windows XP or XP Home or XP Pro or something.
It says Microsoft Windows 8.5 and other things that are installed on it. Microsoft's Digital and Microsoft Office.
Yeah. It's going to be difficult. In very old versions of Windows, DOS was lurking there underneath because Windows was sort of sitting on top of it. That has not been true now for some time and is certainly not true with Windows XP. You can open up, and of course there's also the question as to whether you'll be able to run all that software and print successfully with it. You can open up a DOS or a command window that'll let you type in the same sort of prompts and such that you've been able to do before. It's not really DOS, but it's essentially a window within Windows. To do that, what you do is you just choose the Start button and then click on, in the menu that pops up, Run. And then and it says, what do you want to open? And you simply type Command. And if you type Command in there, you will get yourself a little DOS window, which you could then expand and do whatever you might wish with. But whether that will be, and it'll look, you know, exactly like a DOS window, and actually, for that matter, does work that way. But whether or not you'll be able to successfully run your WordPerfect inside that window or not, I can't really tell you. The other possibility is you can, if you have a old DOS diskette, you can actually boot from the diskette drive. The computer, by default, most computers, if there is a diskette drive, will first look there to attempt to boot, and you could actually boot up DOS. The difficulty there would be you would probably not have access to your CD or DVD drives while you're in the DOS mode. You might or might not have access to the internet, probably not. You might or might not have access to the printer. The other possibility is to go into to look for some of the most of the programs, including the ubiquitous Microsoft Word, can, with a filter that you download, open up old WordPerfect for DOS or Word for DOS files, and you could, with probably not more than a couple of hours of acclimatization, get used to using the Windows version, which actually will, although it seems a little bit fancy and newfangled compared to the old DOS, actually is a pretty convenient way of working with documents.
I went to where it was purchased, and they got the, they call it the geek department. They can help you.
Yes.
You know, and they just looked mystified when I asked about doing that.
Well, and I'm not going to guarantee that it works, but you can, A, get the DOS window just from Start commands, Start Run, and then type Command. That's the actual name of the DOS command window.
Okay.
And then in there, you could try typing any commands that you may wish, including once you've navigated, you'll have to use the old DOS, navigate to the right folder, the right directory and such with all your CD commands.
Right.
And then try running the DOS program. But again, no guarantee that it'll work. The other thing is to boot the machine up if you've got an old DOS disk. And you can, I believe, from, I haven't done this for a while, but you may actually be able to create a format and create a DOS boot disk from within Windows if you choose to format the, you know, the A drive. And I think one of the options is to do it from DOS. So you have a couple of options, but if all else fails, you could gradually phase into the Windows side of things.
All right.
But try those.
Okay, I've taken enough Windows courses that I guess because I started out, I remember when computers were first getting known, I'm talking, we were about, what, 20, 30 years ago, and I had an advertiser about Windows, and I went to one of the local dealers and said, oh, forget that. That'll never fly. That's something new, and it'll never be there. So just stick with DOS and work without that.
There
all you
are
need
two or three software companies that made that same decision, too, and they're not around anymore.
Yeah.
Because it really did take
off.
But try
all
the
right.
command. Try the Start command
thing.
Run.
Okay.
And,
thanks a lot.
Good
okay.
luck.
Okay. Thanks for the call. And we've got we've got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes here. Let's try and squeeze in one last caller this afternoon. Listener in Urbana, hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Quickly, I'm not a computer geek at all, but we're looking to get a new desktop.
Yes.
It's going to have to last a few years. And should I wait till Vista comes out? Is that worth it?
if it's going to last a few years, the general Vista is definitely going to be a worthwhile upgrade, and it's going to be much simpler if you get one that comes from the company, whomever you buy it with Vista pre-installed,
right,
rather than getting what they're now selling, which is the free upgrade. So if it's not something that has to be done for the holidays, and it doesn't really matter when you do it, I would probably wait until you can buy one with Vista installed. So if anything goes haywire, you can call back to the company and say, hey, I'm having a little trouble with this, and it won't be because of an upgrade that you tried to do.
Yeah, that's my question.
So that would be my short answer. And if you want one that's going to last for some time, make sure that it has at least 1 gigabyte of RAM memory. 2 would be better if it's not too expensive.
Yeah.
A massive amount of hard drive space. 160, 300, 500 gigabytes, and you should be in good shape for at least a few years.
That's great. That's what I want to know.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling in this afternoon. And Peter, thank you for helping all these folks out today.
Oh,
more than
welcome.
A dozen callers this afternoon on the program. Peter is with the University of Illinois. Peter Kimball is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the University's Technology Consortium FAST 3. And this topic, computers, is a topic we take up once a month on the third Monday of the month. Peter will be back with us in January.
January. So happy Thanksgiving, happy holidays, and I'll see you next year.
Okay. Happy New Year.
How That's right.
That? Very good.
You're the first one who said that to me.